We are back into the story in Luke chapter 8, verses 26 through 39. We have been looking at a relatively negative illustration of Luke's point. One of the interesting facts about Luke's record of Jesus' authority over the demons of the Gerasenes is that we're not told why the man was demon-possessed in the first place. We are told why the demons possessed the pigs in the story, because it says in verse 32, "Now there was a herd of many swine," that's just an uptown word for pigs, "feeding there on the mountain, and the demons entreated him to permit them to enter the swine, and he gave them permission. And the demons came out from the man and entered into the swine, and the herd rushed down the steep bank into the lake and were drowned." Now, we're told right there why the demons possessed the pigs. The answer is Jesus. He was the one who is evicting them from the body of their human host, and he is the one who gave them permission to possess the pigs as an alternative. So, they possessed the pigs because he told them they could. Now, Luke's point here is pretty clear. Demons can't do as they please. Like it or not, they are restricted to the will of God. Now, it's only a small step backward in logic to think about the fact that they were compelled to submit to Jesus. It's only a small step backwards from that to realize that they had been in dominion over their human host only by the will of God. In other words, though Luke doesn't say it in so many words, the reason the man was possessed by a legion of demons was that God had given them permission to possess him. You have to come to that. If they couldn't even take over the pigs without his permission, it's just as certain as the world that they couldn't take over a human being. Because the Bible tells us that God doesn't care about pigs, but he does care about humans. So, you're just left with this realization that the demons had been given permission by God to enter this man. Even though Luke doesn't say that in so many words, he says it because that's his point. Nobody can live a Jesus-free life, not demons and not humans. And no decision can be pursued except as God permits. If he's got the hair on your head numbered, there isn't anything escaping his notice. And if the demons really are, like Luke says, under his authority, and they have to even beg him for permission to take over a pig body, then the point's made. Jesus is in control. And the corollary to that point is that anybody who attempts to do the impossible of maintaining their own control instead of letting Jesus be the controller in their own mind, they reap the consequences of that futility. This is the record of the pigs and the demons. The Bible has said from the beginning that the day you eat thereof, you shall die, or dying you shall die. And that was said in the very initial issue of who's going to be in control. So this morning we're going to see even more of Luke's evidence of the point. It was his intent to show that Jesus is the Elohim of the Old Testament record. That's the word that is used for God in Genesis chapter 1. And John point blankly tells us that he was the creator. Without him was not anything made that was made. So Luke's point's very well established. But the method that Luke chose to use was to show how absolute is his authority over even those whose active hatred of him has reached its apex. That's the demonic host. Those folks, if I can call them folks, they're persons. They have mind, emotion, will, so on. They hate him. They despise him. And they rebelled against him in the light, and he has cast them into the death that produces. And even they, who hate him worse than any human being ever has, were absolutely compelled to do whatever he said. That's Luke's point. He's Elohim. Now, this is a backdoor approach to the issue, because the issue is that Jesus is the Elohim, he's the God, and using a very potent negative example to establish the truth is what I call the backdoor approach. The front door approach was Jesus using his awesome power to produce and establish life for the sake of those who were dying. This is the impact of all of the healings and the cleansing of lepers and even the exorcisms. When you look at it from the perspective of Jesus doing things powerfully to enable life, you get the front door approach. Jesus is the Elohim of life. He's the grantor of the power, or the exerciser of the power that grants life. But the back door to that is, on the other hand, he is also the powerful Elohim, because anybody who opposes his will runs into the futility of running smack into omnipotence. So, even in the record that we have here, both front and back door approaches are seen depending on where you focus your attention. I mean, if we focus on the poor man that was possessed by a legion of demons who are tormenting him mercilessly, we see Jesus imparting life to him by his power. And if we focus on the demons who were abject in their submission to Jesus, we see Jesus contradicting death by his power. This morning we're going to look into this judgmental side of Jesus as he deals with those who hate him. That's what verse 32 and 33 is about. There was a herd of many pigs feeding there on the mountain, or being fed there on the mountain, and the demons entreated him to permit them to enter the pigs, and he gave them permission, and the demons came out from the man, entered into the pigs, and the pigs were all dead shortly thereafter. And nothing else is said about those poor demons. What happened then? They were so desperate to have a body, and they destroyed the body that they were desperate to have. And then what happened? And you run into this blank wall. Nothing is said about what happened to them then. But I want us to deal with this issue. The record tells us pointedly that living like a demon ends up being so self-defeating that it's an absolute futility. Why in the world would you set yourself against omnipotence when you're going to lose? Absolutely. There is no hope of winning against omnipotence when the amount of power that you or I have, or even the demons have, in comparison, is zilch, not a nothing. We tease ourselves with all of our abilities and all that because we keep ourselves comparing ourselves among ourselves. But when we just lift up our eyes unto the heavens, we say, ooh, there's power. We have none. So this morning, I want to ask the question that the text doesn't actually tell us the answer to, and that is, why was the man possessed by these legion of demons? Why would Jesus give 6,000, almost 7,000 demons permission to enter into a human being? Why would he do that? Why would he do it for the demons who hate him, and why would he do it to the man? Why? Well, there's only one possible answer for the fact that the man was possessed, and that is, he had to have bought into the demon's most fundamental lie at a very fundamental level. That's the only way demons get control of humans. That's the only way they can persuade the permitter to give them permission, is by making the object of their permission a suitable subject for permission. It's like, well, can we go into the pig? Well, yeah. Pigs or pigs, go. Well, can we go into this guy? Now, why would you want to do that? Well, look at him. He believes just like we do. You may be right. Okay, you can go into him. Why? Well, I want us to think about that. My argument is this morning that the demoniac, the guy who was the host of almost 7,000 demons in his own body, had bought into the demon's most fundamental lie at a most fundamental level, because I don't believe that demons can get away with what they're getting away with unless there can be some cogent reason given to the God who gives permission for it. So what's the lie? Luke clearly reveals the lie all the way through verses 26 through 39. The lie is, you can be independent of God's authority over you. That was the demon's fundamental belief. We're the masters of our fate. We're the captains of our soul. We can do as we please. It doesn't matter that we didn't have the power to create this creation. We can do as we want to in it. That's a lie. But it has a lot of plausible evidence, because people are forever deciding to do stuff and they get to do it. Say, well, I guess you can. The only problem with that guess, if you can, I mean, I have my billfold in my pocket. Okay, I want to throw it up in the air. Can I do it? Well, not if God doesn't give me permission. Did he? Obviously. Because the text says point blankly that you can't be independent of God's authority if you have to ask him for permission to do whatever it is that you want to do. And notice twice, verse 31, they were begging him, don't! And they were begging him, please! Well, you don't have to do that if you're independent. You know, the biggest joke, I guess, about human independence is, if we really were, we'd just tell God, I'm not showing up at the judgment, and off we go. Guess again. But the illusion of our independence comes out of the fact that Jesus is so weird in respect to our expectations. If the greatest enemies that you have, who hate your innards to the max, come along with a request from you, what are you going to do with their request? Are you kidding me? You have hated me from the beginning until now. You have done everything you could do to harm and hurt and oppose, and you think I'm going to give you what you ask? You must be from Mars. That's the way we think. But when the demons begged Jesus, let us have the pigs' bodies, Jesus said, all right. Well, that's not the way we would deal with our enemies. But my point is, the illusion of our independence only arises because God is so amenable to our seeking of permission. The demons don't have to plead to be spared the abyss, and they don't have to beg for permission to go in the pigs if they're independent. The fact that they have to ask proves that they have bought into a huge lie. And the problem with believing that lie is that the person who believes it never seems to be able to come to the recognition of his delusion until a fairly frontal confrontation occurs. I mean, these demons had been tormenting this man for a long time, according to the text. They had been making his life as miserable as they could possibly make it, and everybody else's life who was in contact with that person, for a long time. And they had decided, since they were able to do this messy meanness all this time, that that meant, oh, we're free to do as we please in this creation of that guy we hate. But really what was going on there was, he was just permitting it. They weren't independent. As soon as Jesus got out of that boat, and those two guys, well, in Luke's reference, this one guy comes down the trail from the graveyard to threaten this person, this man who dares to come down this path that Matthew says nobody would go down. And then all of a sudden, they see, that's that Jesus of Nazareth guy. And that Jesus of Nazareth guy says, you guys, time's up. I want you out of this guy. Out. Oh, no, please. Don't send us into the abyss. Don't make us go. See, until it was forced by Jesus showing up in person, that is physically, visibly alive in body, until it was forced, they didn't realize that they had to be submissive. They thought, oh, I can be independent! Until it was forced upon them to realize, uh-oh, he just told us straight out, come out of him. What are we going to do with that? Well, we can't do anything but come out. Why? Well, he's bigger than we are. Duh. They should have thought of that several thousand years before this. But the fact is, until it's pushed on them, people, demons or otherwise, that believe this lie, I can be independent, they never seem to be able to recognize it in themselves. It's a delusion that their eyes are hidden from. And there's a good reason for that. I want you to look over at Romans chapter 1, a passage many of you are familiar with because it's so fundamental to our biblical theology. That's why it's in Romans chapter 1. It says in verse 21, even though they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks, but they became futile in their speculations and their foolish heart was darkened. Now, it's an interesting thing. Paul pointedly says here that when mankind bought into the delusion, oh, God's not God. The Elohim is not the Elohim. I'm going to be the Elohim in my life. When they bought into the lie, it says, they became futile in their speculations, which just means they started attacking the windmill, and their foolish heart was darkened. If you look that word foolish up on your online Bible program on your computer, you'll recognize that one of the definitions of foolish is stupid. Now, I realize that stupid's not a very nice word. If I slip and use it several times during this sermon, it's because they were stupid. But foolish, I don't know if that carries the same potency. I know that a lot of times when you say something to somebody and they don't want to hear it, they'll say, oh, that's stupid! And they say it that way because they know that the word stupid carries a lot of emotional impact. So, forgive me if I use words that have an emotional impact. It's not a nice word. You shouldn't go around saying people or even actions are stupid, but that's what the Bible says. Their stupid heart was darkened. Now, why would the Bible say it that way? Well, because just seven verses later on, in the same chapter of Romans, it says in verse 28, just as they did not see fit to acknowledge God any longer, God gave them over to the King James says reprobate mind, the New American Standard says depraved, to do those things which are not proper. That word translated reprobate or depraved is a word that means that the thing that you're talking about can't do the thing that it's identified as. For example, a reprobate judge. He sits in the court to dispense justice. But if he can't dispense justice because he's so crooked that he only does cronyism and that kind of stuff, then he's a reprobate because he's supposed to be a judge and he's not being. The same thing is true of a doctor who can't doctor properly. We call them quacks, but the fact is they're reprobate because they can't do what they're supposed to do. Well, in this verse, what's reprobate? It's the mind. Well, what's a mind for? To think. So what's a reprobate mind do? It doesn't think. So when we see that Paul says that God's reaction to the belief in the lie was to turn men over to their non-think, to turn them over to their stupid heart, what he's saying is that part of the reason things are permitted by God in the wicked element of this world is because there isn't any real option other than destruction. If you turn a person over to a reprobate mind, from then on he's not going to be able to think straight. And that's a judgment by God upon him. And the way that really plays out in human history is it blinds us to ourselves, but it sharpens our focus on others. We can tell when somebody else is being stupid or reprobate, but we can't see it when we do it. That's the blindness of the lie. And it appears from the text here in Luke and other texts that have to do with demons, it appears that this is a major tactic. Keep the human from ever being able to see the stupidity of letting the stupids run him until it's too late. I mean, if the demons are the most aggressive in their hatred against God because they were dwelling in unapproachable light and they rebelled against it, that magnifies the magnitude of their sin. That makes them the most foolish of all the created creatures in the universe because they rebelled against the most brilliant light and truth. And they, for reasons we'll talk about in a little bit, are so fixated on controlling the bodies of humans that one of their tactics is to get the human to buy into their lie that you can be independent of Elohim and then blind him to his own stupidity so he doesn't see that he's actually violating his own principle. I mean, we see it in the demons here in Luke 8. The demons are going around saying, we can do what we want to do. We can be as mean and vile and hateful and all that as we want to be. And they apparently believe that until Jesus shows up. Then all of a sudden the truth hits them like a ton of bricks. Uh-oh, we really are submissive. He could send us into the abyss for what we've been doing. Please don't. And they don't even recognize that the very argument that they've always used with God in getting permission to inhabit a human is, well, he hates you. He believes like we do. You ought to let us possess him because he's one of us, really. That very argument is the one that they're appealing that he not apply to them. Have you been tormenting the man? Yeah. Well, and you don't want me to torment you? No. How stupid is that? We see it here. The demons are completely out to lunch when it comes to the understanding of the principles of God's truth. And it's one of their tactics to keep humans from being able to tell that they're being taken advantage of until it's too late. That's a demonic tactic. Keep the person stupid until the stupids have run him into the stupidity so deeply that he can't get out of it. Then it doesn't matter if he figures it out or not. Too late. So the man's body had actually taken an open door policy toward demons by faith in their lie. He may have actually invited them in. The text doesn't tell us. It's certainly possible. Lots of people get demon possessed because they open themselves up to demons. They say, oh, they're promising me power. They're promising me status. They're promising me money. I'll do anything for those things. Yeah. I'll let you come into my body if you'll fulfill these promises to me. That happens a lot. Sometimes it's indirect permission. I dealt with a young lady one time who had strong lesbian proclivities and all kinds of other problems, and she was a professing believer. So I asked her one day, I said, have you ever opened yourself up to demonic activity in any way? She knew where I was going with that. She knew, like that, where I was heading. And in the conversation, it came to light that just before all this trouble had started, she'd had a little party with some of her friends, and they'd been playing with the Ouija board. Playing with the Ouija board is so unbiblical, it's forbidden by God. It doesn't say thou shalt not play with the Ouija board, but it has some very profound demands that we not mess with stuff that has connections to the nether world, the demonic realm. And sure enough, because she had been playing with that, shortly thereafter, all this other stuff started coming to light. But she didn't want me to point that out to her. As it turned out, she did come to repentance, and her whole life was turned around almost immediately. All that bondage and stuff was shed because she turned to the Lord. But the point that I'm trying to make here is that sometimes people deliberately invite demons to come, and sometimes they just stupidly let them come in by messing with their domain. But all of it is based on the permission of God because they have believed the lie. What God has ordained is that people will experience reality whether they believe in it or not. He has ordained that. And the day he showed up on the shores of the Gadarenes or the Gerasenes, and those demoniacs came down to confront him, the day that happened was the day he brought their experience into sharp focus as to what they had been doing and what they deserved for it. Oh, don't send us into torment. Don't send us into the abyss. Why not? That's what you've been doing to this guy. Almost 7,000 of you have been doing it to this guy. Don't you have any shame at all? Well, no, I don't have any shame, but we sure don't want to go to the abyss. And the problem is that too often those who are hosts to demons don't realize that the very lie they believe that got the ball rolling is being proven to be a lie by their own submission to the demonic authority, control. The man's body wasn't even his to control any longer. That's as clear from this text as you can. It couldn't be any clearer. The man had lost the very control that his faith in his independence from God was supposed to give him. And that means that he believed a lie in the first place. You can't be independent of God. If you try that, you're going to discover that you have no control at all, because you don't. But rejecting divine authority results in submission to demonic control, and that's the outworking of God's authority. You can't live a Jesus-free life. You cannot. You can try. You're going to suffer the consequences of your futility, but you can't do it. He's everywhere, watching all the time. He sees every hair on your head. There's nothing that he doesn't see. Only the ungodly say, oh, God doesn't see. No, he's a deist. He just created and he's off somewhere else on vacation or doing something. He's not paying any attention. Oh, you buy that and you're going to suffer the consequences of believing a lie. Because he does see everything. And one of the things he's decreed is that you're going to face the fact that you can't live a Jesus-free life sooner or later. You're going to face it. You can say it, but one of these days, Jesus is going to show up and ooh, then it'll be just like the demons. Uh-oh, we got to obey this guy. Why now? Oh, well, he's God. Well, he always has been. Well, yeah, but we thought we could get away with stuff when he wasn't here. He is here. Well, we couldn't see him. Makes no difference. Well, we got to do a lot of stuff we want to do. Only by his permission. You want to go into the pigs? Go. He'll give you permission for that. You want to live like a pig? Live like a pig. I mean, you know. He'll give you permission to do that. But rejecting his authority is going to bring you into a frontal demonstration that you can't resist authority, his authority. To do that, you have to have greater authority. So when we ask the question, why was the man possessed by demons? Apparently, the range of demonic dominion is relative to the faith of the demonic lie, and that is, how much are you willing to rebel against God in order to get what you think you want? The more you're willing to rebel, the greater movement there is toward the demonic realm. And then that has a necessarily connected also truth. God gave the demons permission to possess the man for the man's good. Because the man was never going to realize the lie if he had bought into it so deeply and it was never confronted. So Jesus said, I'm going to confront it. Yes, you can go into him. Yes, you can too, and you can too, and you can too, and you can too, until almost of them, 7,000 were given permission. If the man doesn't see that he has no control to be independent of me by this demonstration of his total inability to resist authority, then he's probably hopeless, but we're going to see. So he gave them permission as a dose of reality to the man. And from verse 38 and 9, the guy got it. the successful resolution of a long and painful process of God turning people over to their very desires finally succeeded for this guy. And he went away rejoicing in what God had done for him. So, it's not all bad. But let's look at the results, particularly in verses 32 and 33. The text says, now there was a massive herd of pigs being fed on the mountain. Now Mark tells us how massive. There were about 2,000 of them. That's a lot of pigs. The fact that the text tells us of this massive herd of pigs being fed on the mountain, it does a couple of things at the same time. On the one hand, it reveals the degree of rebellion that was part and parcel of this man's social setting and his acceptance of it. This was the land of the Gerasenes. It was only spitting distance to Galilee. I mean, it was just a few miles. There is no way under God's heaven that the people in Gadara and Gerasa didn't know that God had forbidden his people to eat pork. There's no way they didn't know that. They knew it. But their view of the God of Israel was, oh, he's just a stingy gut that won't let us do what's good and fun and all that kind of stuff, and his forbidding them to eat pig meat is just crazy. But there's no telling how many of them died of trichinosis because God's crazy. And then you have to wonder, who's crazy? He gave the restrictions on the kinds of food that could be eaten, not because he wanted to be arbitrary, but because there were certain things that could happen to you if you ate that kind of food. And trichinosis was a big problem from eating pork in those days. But the fact that these people were hugely into pig farming that close to Israel proves that they had no use for the God of Israel. It's just a measure of their rebellion. That there was a massive herd of hogs within 1,000 miles of Israel was a demonstration of the stupidity of those who reject the authority of God. They think his authority is just his abusive power. It's not. He exercises authority in love. He tells us what to do and not to do because he cares about us. He cares what happens to us, and so he tells us what will hurt us and what won't. And we say, oh, he doesn't know what he's talking about. But again, who doesn't know what he's talking about? Look in the mirror. So on the one hand, it just shows the society in which the man was dwelling and his acceptance of it. And on the other hand, it sets the stage for the demonstration that Jesus went over there to demonstrate on the stupidity of the stupids, to whom the stupid man had released his body. How dumb do you have to be to let 7,000 demons take up residence in your body? I mean, you think you... You think you can handle that many demons? I got news for you. You can't handle one by yourself. They're angelic beings, fallen, but still powerful. You don't have a chance on your own. And it's just plain foolish to open yourself up. But sometimes God's method is, show them. Demonstrate it. So Jesus went across the water to demonstrate it. So that's part of the text. There was a massive herd of pigs being fed on the mountain. That just tells us the cultural slide way away from any kind of concept of God being benevolent in his commands. But it also tells us why the pigs all drowned. This is really kind of interesting. They were being fed on the mountain. That's what it says in verse 32. And when the demons were given permission to enter them, the jolt to their brains was so sharp that they went berserk. I mean, I don't know how pigs think. I don't know if they can think. But the jolt of having a demon suddenly take up residence in your body was a jolt to the pig. And he just went berserk. He started running. Well, the problem was he was on the side of a mountain. And not even pigs run uphill. As they start running, and the natural downhill. Well, have you ever started running down a steep place on the mountain and then decided that you'd like to stop? Cat sometimes. You won't stop. Your legs will take on a mind of their own, and you'll keep running as fast as you can down that mountain, hoping that your legs can keep up with your body, because if they don't, you're going to, you know, rock. It's the ultimate irony that the demons who wanted to control a body were given permission to control this body, a body of a pig, for crying out loud, and then suddenly they found out they couldn't control it. And the pigs ended up in water over their heads and they all drowned. And the demons were whatever. Text doesn't tell us. But that's part of the issue of the pigs being fed there on the side of the mountain, is that it explains why the demons couldn't get them to stop running before they went into the water and drowned. Do you think they wanted to stop them? Well, sure they did. The next thing the text tells us is the demons entreated him to permit them to enter the pigs. That word entreated is exactly the same word in verse 31. They were entreating him to not command them to go into the abyss. How potent a word is entreating when the abyss is your destination? That's pretty potent. Well, they use the same word. Don't let us go. Don't send us to the abyss. Please let us go into the pigs. They entreated him to give them permission to go into the pigs. Now, this demonstrates something that I think is interesting about demons. And that is that they apparently are fairly desperate to have a body to possess. I mean, Jesus had said, come out of the man. And they thought, that'll leave us disembodied. So, I mean, demons are created without bodies, as far as we know. I mean, they're angelic beings, they're spirits. So they were disembodied before they took up residence in the man. And now Jesus is saying, you got to go back to that disembodied state. Oh, please, no. No, please, no. That'd be like sending us into the abyss. What's the big deal? You didn't have a body before you got this body. What do you care if you don't have a body after you leave this body? I mean, but they were begging him, don't do that to us. Why? Well, the only answer that I can come up with is that they are obsessed with possessing a body. Why? Well, I believe it's because of their belief in the lie. They believe that they're free of God's intervention, pretty much. And that leaves them free to dominate anybody they can. They can exercise their authority. It doesn't matter who gets in the way. They'll just run over him if he's in the way. That's a commitment to being able to dominate. They're committed to this principle of dominion, and if they lose the body, they will lose the dominion. Now, you got to want to be in control awful bad to beg your most hated enemy for permission to have a body to dominate. You got to be committed to dominion. I mean, I know people have stumbled all their lifetime over the control issues. I mean, we all know people. Oh, he's just a controller. She's just a controller. If she can't be in control, she just can't be happy. You know, if he can't tell everybody how the cow eats the cabbage, then, you know, he's living hell. It's just, we all know how obsessed some people are about trying to control everything. And they can't stand changes because that suggests that they can't maintain their control. We all have seen that in place, and some of us are there. Point is, the demons had taken that and extrapolated to the maximum. They would rather have a pig's body than nobody. And the shocking thing in the text is that it reads, he gave them permission. That's what you want? That's what I live for. It's the best thing. It's the same thing sending me out of this body. It's the same thing as sending me in the abyss. That's the way you look at it. Yeah. So you want this pig's body. Please. All right. The permission, though, was not just like I just implied that it was, okay. It was intentional. Do you think Jesus didn't know what was going to happen when those demons went into those pigs? How dumb do you think he was? On the one hand, though, the permission to enter 2,000 pigs and drive them into the sea and kill them all was deliberate, intentional destruction of somebody's economy. Somebody owned those 2,000 pigs. I don't know if it was one great big farmer with lots of connections or whether it's a whole bunch of little farmers that had pooled their pigs into one great big herd. I don't know. But I know this. If you make your living raising hogs and you lose 2,000 of them suddenly like that, you just lost a huge hit on your wallet. He just destroyed somebody's economy. And that, on the face of it, was his judgment upon the rebellious. They didn't have any business raising those pigs to start with. The fact that he gave the demons permission to destroy all those pigs is just a way of saying, you know, you should have thought about your choice of being what you were going to raise before now. If you're going to be so open-faced in your rebellion against me, you're going to live with the consequences. That's what Jesus, in effect, said. Well, that was just heartless. No, it wasn't. The permission was intentional, but wasn't heartless. Nothing God does is heartless. It's just a clear declaration that somebody can't violate the truth with impunity. And folks, we need to know that. If we didn't have some demonstrations of the consequences of really stupid behavior, we would never get smart. Because we've got to have some demonstration of the fact that you cannot rebel against legitimate authority without costing. You can't live without Jesus with impunity. You can't. It's going to cost, and He's going to enforce the cost. He did it. You want to destroy those pigs? Fine, they don't mean anything to me, and they shouldn't mean anything to the owners. But they do. And I'm going to teach them how bad it is to depend on something that foolish. So, take them. But on the other hand, it was also intentional in regard to the demons. Oh, we got to have a body to control. We just got to have one. Please send us into the pig so we can continue this dominion thing over bodies. We just got to have a body. You think that's where life comes from? Yeah. All right, take the body. Just go on into the pig. How long did they have that body? How long does it take a pig to drown? That's how long they had it. What happened to them after that? Who knows? Who cares? The issue is, they thought that they could have their way with impunity, and God gave them their way, and poof, it blew up in their face big time because they couldn't control the piggy brains. You know, the brains are what set the legs in motion. And I'm pretty sure that for the most part, demons didn't inhabit hogs, so they had very little experience. They had been possessing humans for a long time, so they kind of got the connections in the brain figured out, and they can come into the body and start manipulating the connections, and in a little while, the body's doing all kinds of stuff, because they can do that. They know how. But even demons aren't omniscient, so if you're going to put them in a body they've never been in before, you need to do it on a level plane, so that whatever happens won't destroy the body before you figure it out. And even if they're really, really intelligent, it's going to take them a little time to figure out which parts to, you know, connect in order to get the behavior right. Well, the problem with that was that the pigs were on the side of a mountain, and boom, off they ran, and then in a little while, hey, pig, stop! And the pig says, well, if I could, maybe I would. But I can't. If that's not as overt a demonstration of the absolute lack of control over others as you'll find in the Bible anywhere. We're in control. You think so? Yes. And if you'll give us permission, I thought you were in control. If you'll give us permission to take over those pigs, then we'll have a body to control. You think so? Yeah. Okay. And you know, the saddest thing about that is that the Bible is filled with the reality that God says over and over what's good for us and what's not. And demanding to be in control is one of those areas where He says, get your hands off of that. That's not your area. You're not smart enough to be in control. Let me do that. I'm a whole lot smarter than you are, and I love you a whole lot more than anybody you've ever dreamed of. So just let me be in control. Now, I have my thing all figured out, and life's got to be this way and this way and this way in order for me to be happy. So you got to give me these things or let me be in control so I can get them. And God says, how many times do I have to tell you? I'm your life. There's joy inexpressible in my presence. Let me be in control and your life will just bubble with joy. And you say, nah, that's not true. He says, okay, take your pigs. Where is Peter when you need him? People for the ethical treatment of animals. What is ethical treatment of animals? Was it ethical to drown them in the sea? Good thing Jesus didn't live now. He'd be before the Supreme Court. And they'd be just like Pilate. Don't you know I can do this to you or do that to you? And he says, you don't have any authority over me except what God gives you. And if he's giving it to you, I'm not going to buck him. So do what you want to do. Can you imagine somebody going into the court today and the judge saying, I can throw the book at you or I can be letting you say, you can't do anything except what God allows you to do. And whatever he allows, I'm willing to accept. So just do whatever. Why, you'd get the book thrown at you so fast. Because they can't stand that kind of humiliation. But you know what? If God didn't want to happen what was going to happen when they threw the book at you, it wouldn't happen to you. Because God is in control. And we don't have to be, because he is. And that's Luke's whole point. All the way in chapter 8, from the beginning to the end, Jesus is trying to get his disciples to trust him. That's the message of the chapter. Belief in, where's your faith? Verse 25. Keep on believing, verses 40 and following. What is the greatest obstacle to believing? The control thing. If you've got to be in control, it's because you don't trust the one who is in control. Well, but I don't like some of the things he permits. It doesn't matter if you like it or not. You're still not in control. I know that it's a painful thing to live in this world with God permitting the wicked to do their wicked stuff. But I also know that he said the glory that is to be revealed is not worthy to be compared to anything you have to suffer here. So just hang on. Just hang on. I'll show you that what you had to put up with is nothing when I get you up here with me. Just hang on. That's what God says. Hang on. Believe me. Trust me. Well, the demons didn't want to trust. They wanted to be in control. The disciples didn't want to trust. They wanted to be in control. Jesus says, you know where that happened? Where that heads? Right straight into the sea. And you know the irony of that whole thing is this. In the Old Testament, the word abyss is the English translation of a Hebrew term that they made no distinction between in terms of the sea or this place that's actually the tube that leads down into the bottomless pit. Now, that's what the abyss in the book of Revelation is. It's that tube that has a lid on it to keep them in there. And the bottomless pit is down below. That's called the abyss. That's probably what they were talking about, being sent there. But in the Hebrew, if you read the word abyss, you wouldn't know if they're talking about the ocean or that tube. And it's interesting to me that the legion says, don't send us into the abyss! And then they run the pigs into the abyss. Make sense of that, if you can. The point that I'm trying to make this morning is, as believers in the God who is God, we are called to be rational people. People who actually believe and then act like they do in the things that he said and in the power that he uses. And if his exercise of authority causes us some pain here because of the way things are working, I mean, the cross was not fun for Jesus. But he is guaranteed the benefit of that. Your labor is not in vain in the Lord. You suffer this because you're faithful to me, and it will not be vain, but you refuse to suffer it because you want to be in control, and that desire will be vain. You want your life to be vain or not. Well, I just like it to be pain-free. Forget that. Experience is not pain-free even for God. Okay? So just junk that. It's not a worthy goal. What you want is for the glory that's to be revealed to be a part of your experience.
forever.
And that's what he's promised, if you believe him. Let's pray together. Father, it's easy for us to make fun of the demons and even the humans that allow them control, because we're out here on the outside looking in. But it's not as easy for us to look in the mirror and say, you know, that thought you just passed through your brain and decided you'd act on, that's not biblical. You know, that action that you just took 5 minutes ago, the Bible says you shouldn't have done that. It's not easy for us to see the hypocrisy in ourselves. But you, Lord, see everything. And we thank you that you monitor and govern and give permission and restriction for our good because you love us. And we pray that you would drill that truth into our deepest soul so that we'll believe it. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen.